There could be no wearing of clothes without their laundering. Just as surely as there could be no going without clothes, not in Hertfordshire anyway, and not in September. Wash day could not be avoided, but the weekly purification of the household's linen was nonetheless a dismal prospect for Sarah. The air was sharp at 4:30 in the morning when she started work. The iron pump handle was cold, and even with her mitts on, her chilblains flared as she heaved the water up from the underground dark and into her waiting pail. A long day to be got through, and this just the very start of it. All else was stillness. Sheep huddled in drifts on the hillside. Birds in the hedgerows were fluffed like thistledown. In the woods, fallen leaves rustled with the passage of a hedgehog. The stream caught starlight and glistened over rocks. Below, in the barn, cows huffed clouds of sweet breath, and in the sty, the sow twitched, her piglets bundled at her belly. Mrs. Hill and her husband, up high in their tiny attic, slept the black, blank sleep of deep fatigue. Two floors below, in the principal bedchamber, Mr. and Mrs. Bennett were a pair of churchyard humps under the counterpane. The young ladies, all five of them, sleeping in their beds, were dreaming of whatever it was that young ladies dream. And over it all, icy starlight shone. It shone on the slate roofs and flagged yard and the necessary house and the shrubbery and the little wilderness off to the side of the lawn and on the coveys where the pheasants huddled. And on Sarah, one of the two long-born housemaids who cranked the pump and filled a bucket and rolled it aside, her palms already sore, and then set another bucket down to fill it too. Over the eastern hills, the sky was fading to a transparent indigo. Sarah, glancing up, hands stuffed into her armpits, her breath clouding the air, dreamed of the wild places beyond the horizon, where it was already fully light, and of how, when her day was over, the sun would be shining on other places still, on the Barbados and Antigua and Jamaica, where the dark men worked half naked, and on the Americas, where the Indians wore almost no clothes at all, and where there was, consequently, very little in the way of laundry, and how one day she would go there and never have to wash other people's underthings again. Because, she thought, as she fixed the pails to the yoke, ducked into it and staggered upright, really no one should have to deal with another person's dirty linen. The young ladies might behave like they were smooth and sealed as alabaster statues underneath their clothes, but then they would drop their soiled shifts on the bedchamber floor to be whisked away and cleansed, and would thus reveal themselves to be the frail, leaking, forked bodily creatures that they really were. Perhaps that was why they spoke instructions at her from behind an embroidery hoop or over the top of a book. She had scrubbed away their sweat, their stains, their monthly blood. She knew they weren't as rarefied as angels, and so they just couldn't look her in the eye. The pail slopped as Sarah stumbled back across the yard. She was just approaching the scullery door when her foot skidded out from underneath her and her balance was gone. The moment extended itself so that she had time enough to see the pails fly up and away off the yoke, emptying themselves, and see all her work undo itself, and to realise that when she landed, it would hurt. Then the pails hit the ground and bounced, making a racket that startled the rooks cawing from the beeches. Sarah landed hard on the stone flags. Her nose confirmed what she had already guessed. She had slipped in hog shit. The sow had got out yesterday, and all her piglets skittering after her. And nobody had cleared up after them yet. Nobody had had the time. Each day's work trickled over into the next, and nothing was ever finished. So you could never say, "Look, that's it. The day's labour is over and done." Work just lingered and festered and lay in wait to make you slip up in the morning.